Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's showtime. It is my pleasure to have the opportunity to lead off the last group of presenters, keeping you from being on an airplane to go home. So I want to try to keep us on time so that those things execute on time. I had this grand plan. For those of you who know me, you'll understand that it would make sense that I would do this backwards, that I was going to start from the E's and work forward. As it turns out, that doesn't work out. because the D and E people, but the D and E people weren't in the room when I started. So I will continue in the same order as the precedent has been set. So with that, let me call Dennis up to do the A team.
Okay, the overachievers are in the room. Yes. Okay, so the A team was focused on a standard 15, and it was about assessment. And while all the groups had that same assignment, it was by consensus that they deferred to us, knowing that the A team would handle that so you didn't have to worry about it. And so we did. We had a great discussion about assessment. So let me set the stage, and we'll get to the condensed version of our findings and some specific recommendations. Let me set the stage. All the groups had a nice mix of academia and practice. So what is the reality of current day practice? And it is that, and we don't like to hear this sometimes, but that the fact is that employers and practice sites are still getting students with wide variation in terms of readiness. And it is the elephant in the room that we don't talk about enough. And as this number of schools grow, as enrollments grow of existing programs, there is this pressure of finding sites. And what happens then, sites become accustomed to taking students from more than one school of pharmacy. And so the feedback is, and sometimes not appropriate, but, well, we don't want to take students from this school because they're not ready, or in this class they're not ready. And so we surface this issue, and it will lead to a recommendation. So we have continued variation of readiness between schools and within classes. The second area of consensus is that we do not feel that schools have truly embraced the culture of assessment. It varies. We see schools that will have a dedicated person or persons that are really the champions for assessment, but we don't feel as though in today's reality that that there are many schools that don't have a full culture of assessment. Which led us to a third clumping of opinion, and that was around the focus on pre-APPE, those students that are about to enter the advanced professional practice experience and the variation we have. Another consensus was that there should be emphasis on performance-based assessment that include both quantitative and qualitative components, because we feel there's been too much focus on the quantitative component alone. And finally, our grouped consensus was there was a need for better tools to assess students during experiential rotations. And once the data is collected, we need to do something with it. We need to use it for programmatic improvement. Which led us then to the following recommendations. And we use the same format of ACPE should. Are you ready for these? I don't know. ACPE should devise a standard for assessing whether students are ready to enter APPEs. And also, it is a means of protecting the public. What we mean by that is we're putting students out there in practice situations, and we need to make sure that they're ready. The second major recommendation would be that ACPE should support the development of a standardized national student assessment to assess the readiness of students to enter APPEs and make progression dependent on this readiness. This would require us to work closely with employer groups to determine what is it that the practice community needs for students that are entering APPEs. And as a footnote, that would include both quantitative and qualitative assessment. We would incorporate knowledge and skills assessment. It'd be what you know and what you can do. And this includes communication skills as well as technical skills. The third major recommendation was to preserve the ability for schools to have that flexibility to choose methods of assessment appropriate for their mission and culture. And here's the key. During the curricular period prior to APPEs, prior to the APPE assessment. The next recommendation is that ACP should ensure that the assessment data is used to improve programs. And finally, ACP should require some standard questions for all APPEs. Examples could be, are the students' communication skills at a level ready to enter practice? Another, would you hire this student? So again, those are the findings and recommendations from Group A regarding Standard 15.
Thank you, Dennis. Excellent job. I've been really looking forward to this session the whole time because I think this is where we're going to hear some real innovation. My sense has been that standards are easy, metrics are hard. So it's fascinating to hear what we come up with, and I expect even more interesting debates on this. So with that, let me go to Plan B. Sandy?
Thank you. Plan B stands for the best. I have the best team to work with, and I had the best help. I neglected to give Jennifer and Lindsay the credit for giving me what I need to do to stand up here before you. And Plan B is we focused on the charge to consider special attention to assessment of student learning in interprofessional team-based patient care. And especially is how could that be done? And we had a very rich discussion about that, and I'm going to try to summarize some of the ideas that came forth and then give you some of the recommendations at the end. First of all, there is a need for exposure for our students to teams earlier and more consistently during the curriculum, and that's because we need to give our students a balance between discovering their own professional identity as well as identifying themselves as a member of the team. There's the potential difficulty, we talked a lot about this, in meeting the IPE requirements in non-academic, non-health healthcare centers and in schools that are geographically isolated. And that, of course, led us to a discussion that there is a need for ACP to be flexible and allow innovation in the kinds and types of IPE opportunities for our students. There's a need to allow for a breadth of pharmacy experiences and focusing on a continuum of care, and to allow development of experiential educational opportunities in non-traditional settings without a current pharmacy presence. And that was another topic that came up, is do we need to have a preceptor in every team-based experience? There's a need for student self-assessment and self-reflection as part of their interprofessional experiences and part of the assessment process for those experiences. It's a need for ongoing and periodic assessment throughout the curriculum. So it's not only do we assess our students during their team experiences, but do we assess our students on the way in? Do they have the fundamental skills and abilities that would lead them to be team members and lead them to be team leaders? And the schools should also be able to describe their plan and longitudinal assessment measures, and then be held accountable for having rigorous plans of learning and assessment tools. Schools should have resources dedicated to assessment. And, of course, the bottom line is, do we have any of these tools yet? Well, there are some tools to measure teaming and their ability to be part of a team, but there is definitely a need for validated assessment instruments. That led us to a number of recommendations that ACPE encourage consideration of experiential curricular structure based on outcomes rather than setting. Okay, right now, especially in APPEs, our group discussed, should we prescribe a hospital setting and a community setting, or should be, what are the outcomes that we're measuring, not the place? ACPE should encourage the academy to continue development of assessment resources. ACPE should not mandate use of a specific tool in assessment. ACPE should encourage AACP to charge the academy to develop a method for assessing applicants on their behavioral attributes, the affective domain, and prior to admission into colleges. ACPE should encourage assessment of self-directed and lifelong learning skills of our students. And finally, ACPE should incorporate assessment of IPE skills in progression standards. That's standard 19, I think. There was a discussion of that. And that's a very short summary of a terrific discussion that Group B had. Thank you.
One of the things I think I expected to hear, and you can expect to hear, is some commonality among these groups and some absolute polar opposites among these groups. So with that, Susan.
There's an advantage to going in the middle. In addition to the great team members who continued their high level of collaboration and input in our conversation, I also want to recognize Heidi Anderson for her amazing way of capturing on the flip charts the essence of what was being said. It was very valuable to us. And Demetra Travlos for capturing everything that was said, not just the essence. So thank you. It made my job a lot easier. With Group C, while we had three questions printed that you could see in the notebook, we started with and pretty much stayed with question number two, which actually was a nice continuation of what we started yesterday when we talked about competencies like ethics and communication skills and cultural competence, sort of those behavioral competencies that we've been talking about in a variety of contexts, and really attention then to how do those get assessed and when. So we came to some, and you'll hear actually some commonalities with what the other group said and some recommendations that might be a little different from what you've heard as well. But findings in no particular order, so I'm going to work through this because I haven't had a whole lot of time to process. But one of the first finding that we had was really the need for a recognition that we have as an academy a lot to learn yet about the assessment of these behavioral competencies. I think we heard from others that there's others from among us that are starting some work in this area. But really, like our presenters even from outside said, that we're pretty much at the infancy. But recognizing that there may be some things we can learn in pharmacy education or health professions education from disciplines that are very different from ours, like human resources management, for instance, and some of the other employment environments. And they may have some tools that could be adapted, or at least we can learn some principles from. So really looking at ACPE, maybe or somebody in the academy should consider providing for us a roadmap of excellence, for instance. How can we get there? And really looking at best practices both within or noteworthy practices both within and outside of pharmacy education. Even looking to our association colleagues, for instance, who have a lot of experience, for instance, in developing and assessing leadership capabilities, as an example. Another conversation that we had, and thanks to the employers and the board members in the group, about using data. So as we look at these behavioral competencies, we focused on assessing them as students were developing them when they belonged to us, if you will, within the curriculum. And then we talked about that some of these competencies would manifest themselves either positively or negatively, which is where, in some cases, we ended up relative to board action after graduation. And then we wandered into admissions processes. So really where we came, the finding was that data and assessment data should come from a variety of places and be triangulated. So things and tools we measure of our students and their development, direct measures like board disciplinary action later on relative to some of these, and trending over time, for instance, would be important, and that a good or noteworthy practice that should ultimately be expected of schools is that measures of these kinds of competencies would come from a variety of sources. We also talked that the development of these kinds of competencies can come from a variety of places, including within our formal curriculum as well as our informal curriculum. We talked a lot about, like, leadership, for instance, is right now at a lot of places developed in co-curricular activities and may not be required. And how is it that we capture student learning and development there as well, and then recognize that the portfolio process is one of those assessment tools that allows for evidence of student development in these areas with artifacts that show progressive development and the opportunity for students to reflect on their development of these competencies as well. So we have that placeholder for portfolios and would hope to continue those. Other findings, if you will, or consensus was around the continuing lack of clarity around the purpose of assessment, and like was already said, sort of a pervasive culture of assessment, both among faculty and preceptors, that sometimes our preceptors don't understand necessarily why these assessments are being done or why they're being asked to do those things. And then we got into sort of the struggles from a preceptor's perspective on a variety, being asked if they take students from different institutions, the variety of tools that are being used to measure essentially the same thing. And then that was a finding. That is a struggle. There's a lot of variety out there, and that you'll see that reflected in one of the recommendations that we have. So looking for consistency among those. And so and we did learn from physical therapy. We were interested in the performance indicator in physical therapy as a common instrument that came from a national organization that all the schools have chosen to use, and suggested there might be some value there, but also recognized that if there was a common tool, much like the precedent that's already been set with the curriculum quality perception instruments that AACP and ACPE co-developed was there were core items, but then also the flexibility for institutions to add specific items there. And then also recognized that in pharmacy, instruments that were specific to environment might be important too. So the example was in an academic rotation, for instance, any kinds of items asking about patient care, they get a lot of not applicables. So recognizing there might need a need for flexibility among instruments as well. So a lot of background with not much order to how I just shared it with you, but our recommendations then were that ACPE should collaborate with others to identify valid and reliable tools and identify noteworthy practices in assessment of the behavioral competencies. So this was seeing what else is out there, both internal and external to health professions, and then on our way to the development of valid and reliable tools. That ACPE should revise the expected curricular outcomes to reflect the increased focus on the behavioral competencies. It's sort of tied to our conversation yesterday that in order to measure them, we have to better define them and include them within, for instance, what is currently Standard 12 to reflect the increased focus on those competencies. And the standard should be specific that the assessment plan should include the student's effectiveness in the workplace post-graduation, so the explicit expectation that a school would be looking at information about its graduates sometime into the future post-graduation. We likened it to post-marketing surveillance. And that the standards should include that the professional degree programs evaluate that there's a similar expectation and performance among faculty and preceptors in their understanding and ability to assess our students. And that ACPE should collaborate with appropriate groups to develop a common evaluation instrument for the assessment of these behavioral competencies. Thank you.
Much food for thought. With that, let me move to the diligent and determined D's. Miriam?
Hello again. Work Group D took a look at overall experiential education issues. So we were asked to consider how to improve the overall effectiveness of experiential education and how ACPE may be in a better position to assess the consistency of student achievement and such. Also, as we looked at the responses from the survey indicating that improvement was needed in certain aspects of experiential education, including the effectiveness of the preceptors, then how should ACPE address those particular issues? So we had quite lively discussion in our work group, and it was very thought-provoking. I'll sort of summarize the findings and the resultant recommendations. So basically, there was consensus that part of the preceptor training and development should include support for the preceptor's abilities to effectively evaluate student performance and the achievement of the desired competencies, and that would include those in the effective domain. Preceptors do need a formal training process that's supported longitudinally over a period of time to ensure appropriate development as practitioner-educator and role modeling and so on. And like Work Group C, we also talk quite extensively about the physical therapy model and including if we were going to develop something ourselves that would be utilized across the board, that the use of psychometricians should be included in that. The overall goal, we agreed, of experiential education should be to produce graduates who are ready for entry-level practice as it is defined. There is a need to determine how to facilitate assessment by all members of the interprofessional team. And so that would include quantitative and qualitative measures in conjunction with the programs, including your portfolios, your OSCEs, 360-degree evaluations, including the patients as well. Of course, the number of rotations, number of patient encounters, and so on, and how that would be managed is based on partially a standardized approach, but others to allow flexibility. Employers and preceptors, particularly those dealing with students from multiple programs, seem to indeed value some level of standardization across those programs as being very important, both operationally and impacting their desire to be involved with experiential education. So elements such as core rotation components, length of rotation, start and stop dates, the various evaluation instruments, and so on. We had lively discussion about whether there should actually be standardized evaluation instruments, meaning everybody had to use the same thing, or a more standardized approach to the process that allowed the individuality of the programs in those areas that they are most noted for to still be able to shine through an evaluation process and allow the students to be evaluated in those particular areas. Various resources, such as practice sites, financial support, experiential education staff, and so on, to support experiential education tends to be somewhat uneven across colleges and schools. So there was discussion about how that potentially can impact the quality of the programs. Also, some discussion around appendices B, C, and D in terms of the review of those and potential revision to ensure that they're aligned, not necessarily redundant, and realistic as it regards to what's expected to be achieved and ultimately assessed in terms of the outcomes of the experiential education process. And then a reaffirmation, indeed, that experiential education does bring mutual value to both students, colleges, schools, employers, practice sites, and so on. So that needs to come forth in all that we do. So there were several recommendations that came out of those discussions and findings, and I won't be specific, but basically they do focus in those areas. ACPE working with other professional organizations and professional / interprofessional practitioners and stakeholders, and that would include your practice sites, employers, health systems, potentially other education systems, and so on, to emphasize the mutual benefits of experiential education to all stakeholders. That we are in agreement that a rubric-driven longitudinal evaluation and assessment process or measures be used to support competency development in experiential education, and that ACPE should work with AACP to consider the development of an employer survey, and I think we heard that earlier today, to accompany the graduating student, alumni, faculty, and preceptor surveys so that we can determine and assess the depth and breadth of the achievement of the competencies. Also, looking at a way to ensure adequate resources, again, with practice sites, preceptors, preceptor training and development, experiential education staff, financial and so on, to fully and adequately support experiential education. And lastly, in terms of looking at what we would call a continuum or a longitudinal approach to experiential education, how it's delivered to effectively support the achievement of the standardized set of competencies and outcomes expectations. In terms of looking at a classification of IPPE versus APPE, longitudinal approach or a block approach to the organization of the rotations, including the use of flexibility and encouragement of innovation in those particular areas. Thanks.
Thank you, Miriam. Well, we've heard from just about every group representing just about everybody here. I'll call Chris up for the E's that represent everybody else.
Thank you, Bruce. Still excellence, effectiveness, and efficiency right here. Kudos to our group again. We had another good discussion session this morning, and we could have gone many more hours, but time wouldn't allow that. As with some of the other groups, we focused on question number two relating to the development of new outcome measures for the PharmD education. And we had a series of findings, and I'll read you some, and then I'll read you all, and then I'll let you know at the end. I have four findings that will become specific recommendations from our group. Firstly, we found that it would be very helpful to have a compilation of all assessment methods and measures that are used across our academy, as well as in other professions and in higher education in general. We know that we have the P's and the AAMS, but what else is out there that may be helpful to us in terms of assessment? We felt the need to see the encouragement of development of national OSCEs, which would consist of things like case studies, methodologies, and so forth, to be used as benchmarking by schools. We felt that we would like to see the improvement in the quality of institutional assessment, essentially the culture of the institution, as well as indicators for institutional success, quality of data, and standardized definitions relating to institutional culture. We also felt there's a need to see development in the measures and metrics to assess student self-directed learning, which leads to lifelong learning, which also incorporates continuing professional development. We felt also that we would like to see ACPE particularly continue to foster development and use of student portfolios. I've heard this a couple of times already. And then the following four findings will be incorporated into recommendations, as I mentioned. But we do see a need to have a clear definition of what entry-level direct patient care means. What are the associated core competencies with that, and what are the measures of competency and how they are assessed? We also see a need, and this may be something that ACPE and AACP can collaborate on, to continue to explore the value and validity of using placement rates as a measure of curricular quality. And we know, of course, that the Department of Education is requiring these and probably going to mandate more in that regard. So it may behoove us to address this sooner than later. We also felt that there should be more development of quantitative and qualitative measures associated with the affective domain of our students. And I've heard that a couple of times already, so that's an echo, really, of others as well. And then finally, we see a need that there needs to be collaborative development of measures and rubrics related to core competencies, which will encourage peer benchmarking across our programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you've heard the recommendations of all the groups now. So we're going to open it up for a little Q&A before we go to the voting so we can perhaps get some clarity on what we're talking about. And let me just start it off by asking the question of the group. Did you hear anything that surprised you? Anything that you thought was out of the box, revolutionary, unique, or contradictory? I feel like the guy in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Anyone? Well, I will start off. One of the things that I heard mentioned a couple of times, I think, was about sort of following our product into the employment environment. And that sounds to me like data we'd all like to have, probably, but presents some significant barriers in acquisition. Does anybody have any thoughts on, other than the use of firearms, how we would extract that information? Not all at once.
Okay. Well, I would actually say that the best way to figure that piece out is to actually partner with the employers to ask them, how they best feel the method of extracting that information, because obviously some utility, they would have to be able to recognize the utility that that type of data would provide, not only for them, but, you know, for the institutions. And actually, it's great data, because then they can help shape and mold what's needed for the future practice.
I agree. In our conversation, the recommendation or the conversation was put on the table by people who are out in practice, either on boards or employers, saying you need to be looking at this. They're using those data to make decisions about who they're hiring. So they are trending and making assumptions about the quality of programs based on what they're seeing. I think if they were co-developed with our practice partners and employer groups, but they're saying they want us to be using those data, so we, meaning the schools, they want the schools to be using those data to improve the quality of our product to go ahead. So I interpreted that as a willingness to work with us. But we did talk about the current reality of low response rates that those of us who do reach out to employers of our graduates asking for feedback now. So that was sort of a current reality we addressed.
Actually, I guess one other piece to that, it came up in our discussion that the employers participate or develop preceptor development and training programs. And so that's another way, I believe, to be able to assess the effectiveness of those types of programs as well, because they are very much interested in knowing if they fulfill their role as trainers and educators for future practitioners.
One of the other things I sort of heard echoed in here was the idea of ACPE actually developing some innovation-stifling assessments of its own to say, well, should we have some kind of pre-APPE assessment that is standardized? Should we have some kind of during-APPE assessment that is standardized? How does that resonate with folks out in the audience? Let's see. Dr. Main.
Thank you very much. And just a little piece of where are we right now with that. In response to a request from ACPE about 2 years ago, if my timetable is right, we set about a project that ended up articulating 11 domains of pre-APPE readiness. And then in the subsequent, since that was approved, our assessment SIG has been working diligently on identifying the most appropriate assessment strategies and tools for assessing performance in each of those 11 domains. Now, that's almost done as I understand it. And determining how we then would subsequently translate that insight into something national, something consistently used, or just ACPE holding the schools accountable in their assessment plan for incorporating the use of those tools appropriately at the right points in time, versus, which is a controversial point of debate, there will be people on either side, the one single pre-APPE national test. And so I think it's a great area. There's been some great work done already, probably time for some significant discussion and debate within the Academy and with ACPE on where do we go next, but just so that everybody knows where we are.
Thank you, Lucinda. It seems to me that that then sort of begs the next question I alluded to. It's like, well, so if we come up with some pre-APPE something yet to be defined that offers some standardization, then there should be a intra-APPE assessments also defined by domains to say, here are some core things that should appear in your APPEs, and here's how they ought to be assessed. I think there are places who would like that. Just tell me what I need to do. And there are some places that would find that very objectionable. Yeah. And I thought I saw another hand over here we could ready. Thank you.
Yeah, let me comment on that from an employer with 35 hospitals trying to serve 8 schools, soon to be 11 schools of pharmacy. We've had to cut back on the number of students we would take in IPPEs and APPEs because the multiplicity of different instruments for assessment of preceptors, of students, of outcomes. We just don't have time to do that. And the staff is the preceptors, and they're burnt out on it. And so whether the schools like it or not, if they don't come with some standardization, maybe on a regional level, if not a national level, it's going to inhibit the sites and the number of sites, the number of schools that will be able to use sites. Organizations will have to say, well, you three schools agreed to use the same one. We'll only take students from 3 out of 8. And so the practical matter is, if it's not done, it's going to inhibit the number of practice sites, the number of students, et cetera. And then there's another aspect of it, too, in that within that those organizations like ours, which is multi-site, it allows us to be more standard, be more directive, provide feedback to the school industry as to what we're looking for, how it is evolving over time, et cetera. Because we have the same thing in that we have, we could give a school feedback from 3 different hospitals and, they'd look at this as apples and oranges. And what is this telling us about you as an organization? So I think that's, one aspect. The other aspect of it is another, I forget who brought it up in our group, but the 800-pound gorilla in the room was, if something isn't done, then in order to accommodate more students, there's going to have to be more payment to sites. It's not prevalent on the West Coast. It's quite prevalent on the East Coast. But payment isn't necessarily the answer. Our organization did take payment at one time, and then our organization on the West Coast said that changes our whole culture, changes what business we're in. The accounting isn't worth the money we're getting. And so we stopped taking payment as a way to solve the resource problem of taking so many students. So we'd rather see better standardization, better efficiency in how to provide this experiential training rather than start down the cycle of payment.
As an East Coast faculty member, I applaud you not taking any money, and I'd like to see you innovate that across to the East Coast.
Yeah. I would like to
respond. Oh, okay.
Group A, we had a very lively discussion on this, and I would ask David Steed, who is our ASP president, to speak to the issue of medicine and dentistry, because one of the issues that employers are facing is that there is such wide variation, even within the same school, in terms of readiness, much less when employers are taking students from multiple schools. And so, Dave, would you share your experience, what you know about medicine and dentistry?
I will come back to you.
Thank you, sure. So where I go to school in North Carolina, I actually live with a medical student and a few dental school students. So I've had the privilege actually asking them, how do you go about assessment? What's your process like? And, of course, with medical school, they have step 1 and step 2 that they need to pass before they can progress throughout the curriculum. And I asked them, is it specific to each school? Is it step 1 different at one school? School A as opposed to school B? It's the same across the board. I go to my dental school colleagues and I ask them. They have a very similar process where they can't matriculate from year to year without passing some type of standardized exam. So the question, I think, is, why does it work well for them? And I think we discussed about expectations. So the students have an expectation early on in the curriculum of what they need to do. So coming into school, they know what they need to pass. But then also employers have expectations, faculty have expectations, preceptors have expectations. They're all on the same board as far as metrics are concerned. You can actually able to measure progress kind of get results and advance the profession that they're in. So I learned a lot from them, and I asked, you know, what are we doing in pharmacy with respect to that?
Thank you. Let me go back over here, and then I'll come back to Dr. Chrisman.
Said this, but I don't know that maybe as strongly as we talked about it in our discussion. And it's already been said, but I think maybe we should just think about it a little bit more. A standardized tool for APPE evaluation would be all the practice folks want it, I believe. But it does not mean that you still can't have flexibility in your experiential program. So keep that in mind. It could still be different weeks if you wanted it to be, or you could set it up differently. And you could use that all the way through the program. That's what's so cool about PT, is you don't have to have a pre-APPE. It's going to be what you use in your experiential education all the way through the program.
Thank you.
Reflecting on at least my interpretation of Group E, the schools aren't asking to be told what to do. What we're asking is for a definition of the core competencies, the minimum core competencies that all graduates should have, whether they come from private schools, public schools, schools at academic health science centers, schools at liberal arts colleges, it doesn't matter. In terms of, we have a responsibility to society to assure that pharmacy graduates mean minimum core competencies to provide patient care. How the schools achieve that, we need lots of flexibility in terms of how we achieve that. But no matter how we achieve that, those graduates should have those core competencies.
Excellent. All right, I got time for another question if somebody has a burning issue. Otherwise, with Mr. Zellmer's permission, I think we might be ready to move in 5 minutes early and begin polling the audience. Oh, we have one more comment. Penny.
Chris. Actually, I'd like to just put forth something, I guess for the record, so to speak, that hasn't really come up, and that was, I noticed in the stakeholder survey, and I don't think it was an anomaly or just a blip on the radar, there were a significant number of comments from stakeholders talking about, or at least alluding to, that we are producing a product, our students are coming out of our programs with considerable amount of clinical knowledge and ability to apply that knowledge, but they're sometimes lacking in being able to produce or perform the technical aspect of the job as it is today. We've talked a lot about the future, but I'm just wondering if there have been discussions, and I was in Group E, if there have been discussions in any of the other groups about some of those survey comments that had to do with students not being able to do certain aspects of the job as it is today. And what is our, have we as a profession, people in the room seen as leaders in the profession, are we just saying that we need to move forward and accept that maybe some of the technical aspects need to be picked up by the technicians that work with us, or is it no longer our responsibility, or is it just that we're expected to do that and we're not really talking about it while we're here? I'm just curious if that occurred to anyone else.
Anybody else want to jump in?
Group A definitely addressed that issue. It was very loud and clear from both employers as well as academics that there is a disconnect sometime, and it becomes very frustrating for the practice community then to have students that have progressed far enough along in their curriculum to have perhaps knowledge but don't have the functioning skills. And so that's why you heard the recommendations out of Group A for some sort of partnership with employers to better understand what are the expectations from employers about students being able to show up on site, what basic elements and skills and knowledge, communication skills should they have to be practice ready as students entering APPE, different from when they are leaving the school at the completion of their degree.
Anybody else up here comment? All right, let me go to Joan, and then I'm going to have to move us along. I'm sorry, Joan, I got one back here, and we have 4 minutes.
Okay. I'd like to go back to the student perspective. I do appreciate your insight about what medical students and dental students are saying about having those step exams. I would like to also consider the faculty perspective when you look in those programs about how important those exams are compared to the curriculum and what is actually happening in the curriculum and how important it is to go to class and get professionalized in those programs. And I'm hearing a lot about there seems to be some growing support for having these standardized exams so that we can have benchmarking, but I'd also like you to reconsider the importance of having outcome assessments that measure the effectiveness of your program, and as well as how well you're benchmarking against other programs. Looking at your own program, I think, is just as important. And we've spent so much time during this conference talking about how important curricula are to... Is there a caution about moving towards a national licensing exam that then makes that exam the most important outcome?
Let me go and let Joan make her comment, and then we're probably going to have to move along.
I just want to focus attention on some things that have been absent from the discussion, just as a take-home. I wonder if the group talking about the future had any discussion about individualized medicine, genomics, and that sort of thing, which is in our future, probably our immediate future in this profession. I say our because I sort of adopted you. And the other thing that I haven't heard anything about is international issues, international cooperation, international standards. People are moving across boundaries much more now and will in the future, and I'm wondering if that would affect standards. There may be other omissions, but that's what I noticed.
The short answer is yes and no. Yes, we did discuss the use of virtual classrooms and virtual issues in experiential part of the curriculum. And and personalized medicine. But we did not talk about the global issues, which I think are important as well. Okay. Sorry.
All right. With that, let me wrap this up and turn this over to our mastermind, Bill Zellmer. Our thanks to our panelists and to their work groups.